Today's Mom's Day.
Happy Mama Day.
Mom, I love you so much.
Did you call your mom today?
Of course.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good
of course man. I call her every single day. If I don't, she'll kill me. happy Mother's Day. Today's the last day of our flash sale. This is actually the biggest flash sale we've ever done because we've never done a flash sale with a bundle. And this is for the Build Your Butt bundle.
Yeah, Doug wasn't really excited about that because the bundles are already grossly discounted. And then to turn around and give half off of it on top of that, he was a little worried about that.
Now, the Butt Builder bundle has MAPS Anabolic MAPS Aesthetic, but it also has a mod in there where we programmed out what you can do to turn your glutes back on. Because one of the problems that we have seen time and time again with men and women who can't develop their glutes, it's not necessarily the exercises that they're not doing. It's that their glutes don't fire the way they want them to. So the mod has movements and techniques that turn those glutes back on so that when you go do your deadlifts and your squats and your other traditional exercises, you get more activation in the glutes. And that's included with this. So you get MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Aesthetic, the mod, and it's already discounted. And then we cut it in half again. It's a flash sale, which means it's ending. Actually, this is the last day. It's the final day, right?
Yep.
When this airs. So you go to mindpumpmedia.com and sign up there.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Josh Thompson. Great guy, man.
Stud. You know what?
Did you grow up watching
For a guy that's been punched in the face a lot, he's a handsome motherfucker.
I can't believe how young he looks.
He's a handsome motherfucker.
He's my age.
Yeah, no, he's a good-looking dude. Yeah.
I grew up watching the guy. He's one of my favorite MMA fighters back in the day because he was one of the earlier like pure mixed martial artists. Like back when he kind of started, you still had guys that were either just really good grapplers or really good strikers. And Josh is all of that stuff. And he's very athletic.
Like he's the real punk.
The real punk. Yeah. So you're going to hear us talking to Josh Thompson in this next podcast. Now you can find him on Instagram at The Real Punk. On Facebook, it's Josh Thompson or Josh the Punk Thompson. And you got to check out his gym. He's actually got a jiu-jitsu / MMA / place where you could work out in San Jose. It's Knox Gym. And you can look them up online at knoxgym.com. That's KNOXX gym.com. And he also has a podcast, which is pretty cool. It's called Sammy and the Punk.
What's really neat about this episode is if you don't know who Josh Thompson is, he's been in like almost every organization, mm-hmm. like all the big ones. So he shared some great old Dana White stories and the difference between Pride and all those different organizations. I mean, he's had an opportunity to fight some of the most elite athletes mm-hmm. That have came through the UFC.
We got to film some cool exercise moves with him. What's really cool was he was showing us how to do things like use a physio ball to train for jiu-jitsu. And as he's showing us, we're just like, wow, that's a great exercise. Like, even if you don't do jiu-jitsu, these are great movements for proprioception, for core stability, for hip mobility. So
super exciting because Doug actually put together a YouTube series that he shot, and it'll be live when this goes live. So when you're hearing this, so make sure you guys run over there, pause this right now, get over to the Mind Pump TV YouTube channel, subscribe to that if you're not already subscribed, and you guys will get a chance to see the series that we put together with Josh Thompson.
I got to do a little jiu-jitsu with him, so it's kind of cool. So without any further ado, here's Mind Pump talking to Josh Thompson.
I did the blind date. The show, the UFC had me on the show Blind.
Oh, no way.
So they had a whole week of fighters. And it was me, Tiki Goshen, Pete Spratt, Tim Sylvia, anyways. So I show up and then they introduce you to your girl that you're supposed to go on this date with. and the thing was, we had to do the show, and I'll give you the rundown and the gist on that whole deal. But man, they fucking Dana White just stuck. He called us and he goes, "Hey, you guys need to do this show for me." I was like, "Dude, I have a girlfriend, man. I've been with my girlfriend for a while."
Doesn't matter.
One of the guys was married.
What?
Oh, one of the fighters was married.
What a dick move to put you guys.
Go ahead.
But so he just made you guys.
He made us. So like guys like Nick Diaz turned it down. If you notice, Nick Diaz got cut from the UFC right after that.
You know what's funny?
Because of that stupid show?
Yeah, because he said, no, look, when we sign our contract says you have to do any PR events that they set up for you. Okay, you can't say no. So he said, yeah, Nick's like, I ain't doing that fucking show. no fucking way I'm doing that show. So he didn't do the show. But what I was trying to say was that we're talking about how we talk about all the topics beforehand.
Yeah.
When you walk onto the show blind date, they separate you guys. You can't talk. Every time the camera cuts, you're not. They separate you. They grab her and they grab you and they pull you guys away from each other. So they catch everything on air.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they don't let you guys talk. Even across, like, they say, no, we want her to look this way. You guys can't even make eye contact. They want to capture all those moments.
Whoa.
Yeah. So maybe that's something you guys should do. As soon as the guest walks in, like, hey, you go over there in the corner.
Yeah, go in the corner.
Fucking guy, don't say one word.
Yeah.
Wow.
We'll get team on you to take
I didn't realize
outside.
That they were that so controlling.
Oh, yeah, 100%, man. Like, I mean, like, and then.
Because I hear a lot of rumors about, you hear fighters, you know, some of the fighters, especially after they leave the UFC, like, they complain about how they operate. And you hear it, and you're not sure if it's, is that really what it's like, or are they just saying that because they left? And, but it's, I guess, I mean, you hear enough of it, it's got to be true.
Well, it goes for any company like Google. If I worked for Google, right, I wouldn't talk shit about them when
sure.
I worked there.
Sure.
It affects my pay scale. Right? It's the same thing. As soon as guys are more vocal once they leave. But, I mean, they are controlling, but you also know what you're getting yourselves into when you sign that contract. Let's not be mistaken, man. You're going to pay me, and I'm going to go on this show. I got paid to go on that show, The Blind Date, but it's like you put me in a really shitty situation.
Oh, yeah.
I got to turn to my girlfriend and be like, hey, who I was with for years, you know, and you're like, yeah, I got to go on this show. And I'm like, I had to explain to her that, like, literally everything you saw, that's the only time we talked. Because I didn't talk to her in between. She's like, yeah, whatever.
Oh.
You know? But I mean, the point is, no, we didn't talk.
Oh my God.
Because they want to capture everything.
Yeah.
So you got to lay this out for us. I didn't even know this was a show that
was
the UFC
did. Was she at least hot?
You know no, I mean? She was hot. What they do is...
That actually makes it worse, bro.
I'm
going
just
home
saying,
and telling your girl is like a dime piece that you had to pretend to like.
What made it worse was that they actually do research on the girl or whoever girls that you've dated or girls that you're interested in, and they bring in a girl that's like that. This girl just so happened to be like my girlfriend.
Oh, no!
So my girlfriend was like... What the fuck?
You're replacing me?
Yeah, she's like, this is ridiculous. How did they know that you like, you know, this kind of girls? And I was like, well...
I don't know, honey.
I was like,
analytics?
Is this on Spike? Where do they air?
So, no, this is old. Back in the UFC days, like probably 2002, 2003. Because I was in the UFC in 2000 to 2004.
Yeah.
So I fought in UFC 44. I think we're on UFC like 250 right now.
Wow. Yeah.
And then the UFC 250 only counts the UFCs that have been pay-per-views and stuff. That doesn't count Fox fight nights and things like that. So there's way more UFCs that have happened. I fought on 44, 46, 49, and then so on.
You're an OG for sure. I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. When was your first pro MMA fight? How old were you?
Back, I just turned 18.
18 years old.
Yeah, just turned 18.
You've been fighting that long.
Yeah.
Not too many people have that kind of staying power.
No, it's been a long time, man. It's been a long time.
How are you able to do that?
Because
it's a brutal sport. I mean, you're going to get hurt, you know?
Yeah, I think what happened, I came from a wrestling background, played soccer a lot as well, so I was always in good shape. I just wanted to train. It's actually a true story. You guys will get the gist on this. Is my little brother was a wrestler too, and I was a wrestler in high school. He was wrestling in middle school, and I had started doing like Muay Thai. My grandmother had put me in Muay Thai. It was after school and I had some time. There was between seasons soccer and wrestling. So she put me in a Muay Thai and her hairdresser's son had owned this place, you know. So I was like, all right, whatever. I went. And he also taught jiu-jitsu. Well, he was actually from San Jose, the Bay Area. He used to train with Ralph Gracie.
Oh, wow.
So he moved up to North Idaho where I was going to high school at the time.
Oh, wow.
And she had put me in. And my brother, who was a wrestler, he's like, no, I want to do the grappling part. He wanted to do the jiu-jitsu. So I came home one day and I was bigger. I was the better wrestler at the time because he was still pretty young. I came home. Oh, he's just to mess with him, head snaps, you know, bully him around in the house. Well, I got
typical
to
typical brother shit.
Yeah, I got to his back and I put my hooks in. I was like Saturday night riding him, you know, like fucking just putting the heavy pressure on him. And I crossed my feet and he caught me in a leg lock and an ankle lock. And he was that little smart ass kid that kind of was like this. He's like, oh, what? You want me to, you're tapping and you give up? Like, he was doing that to me as he's tapping me. I'm like, I'm like freaking out. Let go. And he's like, no. Are you ever going to mess with me again? No. You know, and putting more pressure, not putting. So it was one of those scenarios. Like within a couple of days, I was like, no, I'm going to take jiu-jitsu.
And that's how it started.
It all started that way, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, as far as the longevity in the sport, it really just comes with, like, I never could afford to eat shit. you know, I always had to just eat at home, and whatever I made is what I had. And, you know, I could never afford, you know, soda and drinks. And it was like, I had to drink water, whatever was in the, came out of the faucet. Luckily I lived in Idaho at the time, so the tap water is drinkable.
Not here in San Jose, it tastes like you're sucking on pennies.
Yeah, exactly.
You look young too. I couldn't believe your age when you, I knew your age, but I forgot. Yeah. And I saw you and you're like, yeah, I'm about your age. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's your way of calling me old. Yeah. Thanks.
Hey man, we're the same age. So
that was a shit sandwich for sure. Right.
How many organizations have you fought in?
So I fought in all the top organizations around the world. So I fought in the UFC, was my first big organization that I fought in. Fought in Pride, and I fought in Dream, and I fought in Strikeforce. I was the Strikeforce world champion.
That's right.
You know, and then I came back to the UFC when the UFC bought, and now I'm with Bellator. So I pretty much, people ask me like, how'd I bounce around? But the thing was, is that when the UFC got rid of the weight class, the lightweight division, back in 2004, I had nowhere to go. I could have stayed in the UFC and fought guys at 170 like some of the lightweight guys did. And I was like, fuck that. I've seen Matt Hughes, man. That guy's fucking huge. Mm. George St. Pierre is huge for 170.
What do they walk around at?
210.
Oh, shit.
That's a big cut.
That much of a difference?
Yeah. John Fitch, I train with him like almost every fucking day. Guy walks around 202, 205. Easily.
Wow.
Yeah.
Easily. Big deal. You know, so these guys are making 170. I'm like, dude, I'm not going to 170. You're out your goddamn mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Which one's your favorite organization of those?
Well, it's hard to say because, like, my favorite organization was Strikeforce because I felt like we had something. We finally had got something that we have. We had. Think about all the champions in the UFC right now. We have them. Strikeforce had them. Mm. Luke Rockhold, DC, Jacare. Like, we had Cain Velasquez.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
He had his first fight was in Strikeforce. Mm-hmm. So we had Verdum, who was the champion who beat Cain, but, like, he was with Strikeforce also. Sure, he was in the UFC before. UFC said, oh, he's washed up, he's done, they cut him. Then he went to Pride, and then he came to Strikeforce after that, beat Fedor here in San Jose. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, we had all the top guys. We had all the best heavyweights, 100%, except for Cain, because Cain went, he ended up going to the UFC. Mm-hmm. But we had all the top heavyweights at the time. We had Alistair Overeem, we had Fedor, we had, Verdum. We had Karatanov. We had all the best heavyweights. Paul Bonatello. We had all the best heavyweights at the time. And then when the UFC bought them, they got the heavyweights. And that kind of sucked, you know, because you had me and Gil as the best lightweights. You could arguably say we were probably the best lightweights in the world at the time because we went to UFC and fuck, he could say he arguably beat Benson Henderson. Mm-hmm. Then I knocked out Nate Diaz. And then I fought Benson next. And I arguably beat him as well. Fucking split decision loss is the worst. And I broke my thumb, tore all the ligaments in my wrist, you know, in the first round. I still fought the rest of the five rounds, and everyone was so pissed that I lost.
Ugh. Do you see that being the model? Like, because the UFC
is such just going to ask you, why is that? Why do you see the hopping back and forth of the athletes? And, like, what is it about each organization? I mean, it can't just be dollars, or is it just dollars?
So, for me, when I went to Pride, I got into Pride because of Scott Coker. Scott Coker was, he had a relationship with the Japanese. And the relationship with the Japanese was he used to promote K1 USA. Well, K1 kickboxing, which is kickboxing, K1 Japan was huge, man.
It was bigger than Pride, right?
Fucking enormous. It was way bigger. And, like, on the Japanese side, the American kickboxing just wasn't that big. Mm-hmm. The K1 USA that he used to run, Americans weren't really into kickboxing as much as they were into boxing and getting into MMA at the time. So he decided, like, okay, look, I'm going to get done with K1. I'm going to fold that up. He had already owned Strikeforce. I was fighting after the UFC, got rid of the lightweight division. I was fighting for Scott Coker as a kickboxer just to make money, man. Like, I was like, look, I still want to fight. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I was like twiddling my thumbs, like, fuck, my career's over, you know? But in reality, he was like, hey, I'll get you a kickboxing fight. Fighting, like, you know, whoever. But still, $2,000 here, $1,500 here. I was like, fuck, better than nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew I wanted to be a fighter. So I fought kickboxing, just kickboxing. Then he called me and said, hey, I got a fight for you in Pride. Well, at the time, you know, I was the number one guy in the world when I fought my last fight in the UFC against Eves Edwards, and I lost. But that fight should have been for the UFC lightweight title. which is so upsetting because that fight should have been for the title, and then they cut down the division right after that. We were the actual official last fight.
Why wasn't it? Explain that. Why
they just they were hemorrhaging money to keep the organization open.
Oh wow!
So that's when they started. After I had left, shortly after that, they started the Ultimate Fighter. And if you watch the documentary,
so before that, they weren't that financially successful.
No, Ultimate Fighter turned it around.
Totally. Ultimate Fighter, and had they not had that one fight with Forrest and Stephen Bonner, that whole thing would have been a fucking
that was massive.
How crazy is that? Because that was an epic fight. Yeah. I mean, I've watched all the I've watched every season. I've been a fan of UFC since the very beginning when it was underground and you know, and nobody really knew about it. But man, that season when that happened, that was so big. And what a power move for Dana to actually allow both those guys to go in the UFC after that. How could you not right after that?
Yeah, fight? No, exactly. It's 100%. How are you going to tell one person no, you don't get the six-figure contract? You got to be fucking out of your mind,
right?
Like, I mean, that was a fan favorite fight for years. It's still when they when you go into an arena. I don't know if you guys have actually been to a UFC arena.
Yeah.
When they fight, that's the fight that they show when they come out to the what's that movie? Shit, it's real famous. Wait, they play the song to it. Like the bagpipes. The bagpipes.
Oh yeah. Braveheart.
Braveheart?
No, not Braveheart.
No.
The other Irish movie where they're killing people, they're like
come on, Justin. This is your wheelhouse, bro.
The two Irish brothers that just kill everybody.
Yes, it's the Boondock Saints.
Boondock Saints.
Come on, guys.
Oh man.
Come on.
Oh, got your name all over.
That hurt my brain. I was gonna say Highlander, and I'm like, that's Scottish.
Oops. Yeah, I'm glad I didn't.
It's like one of my favorite movies too. I should have known that.
And I've been watching one of my favorite movies. Yeah.
But that when you walk into the arena and then they get ready to start the main event, that song comes on and that fight comes on.
Yeah,
you know, okay. I mean, that's how popular that's how much respect they still show to that fight, because that's really what kept the organization alive.
Being in the sport as long as you have, from 18 till now, I mean, that's you've seen it change so much. What are some of the things that just
what are
I
the
guess,
good things and what are the bad
yeah.
things that you've seen?
The good things are that the sport is growing. Kids are now doing it from the time that they start martial arts. It's MMA. You know, I'm not a proponent of kids striking to the head, you know, and doing MMA at a young age, because now we know a lot more research and stuff. The studies have shown with the CTE, but I want them to know how to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. If you want your kid to stop being bullied, fucking give him some sort of martial art to protect himself. And what I try to tell people that the best two martial arts you can teach your child is jiu-jitsu and wrestling. Because you want to know why? Almost 95% of the fights, kids, they end up on the ground.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Why not just have your kid learn jiu-jitsu and wrestling so the kid knows how to take the fight to the ground, get to a submission position, and then wait till the teacher comes to break it up.
Right, right.
Like, hey, I told him to stop. He didn't stop. I'm holding him here.
Yeah.
You know, I think there was one, there was this kid bullying this kid. It's like a YouTube, it's on YouTube and it went viral. This like kid's pushing him, hitting him, this and that, and the other small little skinny kid drops his backpack and just fucking lights him up. Not only just lights him up on the feet, but then boom, does like a jumping, swinging arm bar. And then he's like holding the arm bar. He's like, "Hey, look, you're done." The guy's like, "Get off me, bitch. Get off me. Dude, you're getting fucking arm barred. Why are you talking shit?" You know what I mean? But it's like that type of scenario where the kid's like, "Hey, are you done? Stop trying to fuck with me."
Yeah.
Like he's got him in the arm bar position. The kid can't move.
Yeah.
You know, then the kid lets go, because when you teach your kids at a young age, that they can control themselves in that scenario. Like if you didn't teach the kid that those martial arts and he saw that just off TV, he would have broke the kid's arm.
Right.
But the fact that he's trained in that, now he's just thinking to himself, I've got him. He's not moving. Mm-hmm. I can wait for someone to come break it up, or just until the kid says, okay, I give up.
That's one of my favorite things about jiu-jitsu, is that you can, if you have to, you can fight and you can control someone and you don't have to hurt them in order to win. You know, a confrontation. Whereas if you're teaching your kids boxing or kickboxing, which is fine too, but when they defend themselves, yeah, they're going to be deadly. And in order to defend themselves, they're going to break some other kid's face or nose or whatever. And especially nowadays with the way people sue each other, it's like you don't want to get that letter from you don't want to get called from the school. Like your kid just broke some other kid's face. You're like, oh shit, I'm not going to pay for it.
Yeah, I just feel like striking is not really the way to teach your child. You know, like I just feel that jiu-jitsu and wrestling are the main ways. Also, an individual sport like wrestling teaches your kid to grit it out in a 90-degree room when they're exhausted. So what happens, what I've learned, I've worked with a lot of kids. Actually, as a matter of fact, right before I came here, I had two kids that I was training that I do like sports and agility training with them. Mm. But I get them to the point where they're so tired that they, to the point of exhaustion, where they start to cry.
Mm.
And it's maybe it sounds really harsh, But the reason why kids cry after a competition, not because they lost, because they've exerted so much energy and they still didn't win. Mm-hmm. That's why they have no idea what it's like to be tired. You know, like I've seen kids, they run around and run around and run around, right? When they run around and run around, they don't feel it. But all of a sudden you see one time they're like, they're sweating, like they can stop whenever they want. But when you make a kid go beyond that little bit extra where their body just, they're not used to being exhausted. They don't know what that feeling is where they can't breathe, where their muscles are so tired and they don't know what to do. So they just start to cry. And I said, like, it's a normal thing. So teaching a child to go that their body can do so much more because their mind, all their mind has to do is will them to do that. But right. They just have to get used to, they have to develop that by training it and doing it more often.
You know, it's funny, you talk about that, and when you watch mixed martial arts, the people who are known to be the toughest in the sense of like the grinders, the guys that are not going to give up, that are going to fight and keep going, are the wrestlers. They're usually mm-hmm. the wrestlers.
Yeah.
And people wonder why. Like, why is it that the wrestlers are just so gritty and tough? And if you go to like a good high school or junior high wrestling, you know, you go see the wrestling practice and the coach and stuff, if you figure it out. Like
yeah.
at a young age, they understand how to push themselves hard. They understand how to, you know, deal with pain
it's
and exhaustion.
Mentally, physically taxing.
Wrestlers,
like it's his ultimate degree.
Wrestlers yeah. are mentally very, like people yeah. who have been wrestling for a long time, they're just mentally very, very, very tough. Especially when you get your hands on somebody at a super high level. Like, in order to beat that person, you have to really beat them.
Well, and there's definitely an argument, too, to take, you know, kids and athletes to work on their mental discipline and their fortitude and you know, kind of establish that in order to then pursue, you know, greatness. And so there's a smart side to training as far as, like, not getting too exhausted, you know, to lead up into competition. But at the same time, like, establishing that overcoming mentality is so crucial to do.
Well, the real lesson isn't even necessarily in the exhaustion aspect of it. It's in what happens after and how you communicate that, you know, how you can communicate mm-hmm. that. And if you think about fitness, like, I've worked with a lot of kids, too. I love working with kids. And the thing I love about fitness with kids is that it's such a nice, clear kind of example, a very small microcosm of what life kind of is like. But it's simple, right? It's just we're moving, we're exercising, we're running or whatever. And then they learn how to deal with that. And then those lessons actually have a lot of carryover into everyday life. So when they, you know, their girlfriend breaks up with them or life, you know, they lose their job or whatever, they have that skill.
Well, Josh, I want to go back again to what you've seen, the good and the bad of the evolution of the sport. I don't know if you listen to Fighter and the Kid or how well you know, like, Brendan Schaub. I know he talks a little bit on his show about that. What are your thoughts on the evolution of the sport and UFC and specifically talking about them and where it's gone and where it was? Like, what do you like? What do you don't like?
There's so many different things. I loved when it was 5-6 shows a year, but then I understand the importance of having it more often. Mm. But I also don't like how it's every weekend, sometimes 2 shows in a weekend, 3 shows. Now you're taking the importance of the athlete who's grinded their whole life away to become popular and become a star. They're not stars anymore. So back in the day when there was 5 to 7 to 10 shows a year, right? It was special.
To make that card was a big deal.
Yeah, well, not just that, not just to make that card. But then when you knew where you were signed by the UFC, you knew you were a number one. You knew you were a top talent in the world. Mm. Now they have shows every weekend. Like, I think about a month ago or 2 months ago, they had a show in Germany and they had a show in Brazil in the same night. Whoa. Like, literally both shows were the same night. And then they had a show the next night here in the U.S. So 3 shows all within a 24-hour period. Now, they did it because of the time change. You're not going to watch the show in Germany at the, you know,
right.
at 8 o'clock without already seeing the news and seeing what the results were and blah, blah, blah. And it was on Fight. It was on Fight Pass. Hmm. But I see that what happens is when it grew so fast, now there's no stars. And when there's no stars, the fighter doesn't get treated the way that they should. The athlete doesn't get treated the way they should. Okay. I think that's the problem that you're seeing right now in college football. They're like, hey, my jersey was the number one selling jersey in the world. Why am I not getting anything for this? Like, I'm struggling to like paint, to wash my damn clothes,
yeah.
you know, and I'm not getting paid for this. You know, it's like, you're making all this money off me because you gave me a $35,000 education, you know, but I'm going to be gone in a year. You know, that's why I'm leaving to the NFL. That's why I'm leaving to the NBA, is because I'm a one-off, because I'm going to make my money, get out. I know I'm a draw. I'm going to go to the NFL and make money. I just see that in the select that Dana and Lafortidas had did a good job of making sure that Dana was the star. When Chuck had left, he was the last big star that they had. Mm-hmm. Chuck, Randy, that was it. He was like, because I don't know if you guys know the history on Tito and Chuck. They used to be managed by Dana. So when
I didn't know they were managed by him.
Yeah, Dana was their manager back before they had bought the UFC. So he had turned and said, hey, when he had met the Fertittas, he knew that the UFC was for sale. So he had turned to the Fertittas and said, hey, I think there might be something here. The Fertittas said, you know what? You might be right. So they decided to buy the UFC, and they ran on it with that for a while. But I think what Dana and them have done is, what better way to make sure that you're always staying focused on the UFC is make Dana the star. Because Dana's not going anywhere.
He ain't going to lose a fight.
No, he's got money invested. He's not going to lose a fight. And he's going to always be there. No way is he leaving that organization. He owned 10, 12, 15, I don't know what the percentage was, but he owned percentage of the company. He's not going anywhere. The other thing that you're going to do with him is you're going to make other guys, the other people you're going to make celebrities, the ring girls. Bro, have you seen the following those ring girls have? Yeah. And I'm not knocking them for being what they are. I think it's great. But these ring girls have got, 800, 1 million, 1.5 million followers making money hand over fist.
Oh, that would actually be really frustrating if you're a fighter in there getting your ass whooped, man, and fighting for your life, and you got
ring girls making more money than you. It's the worst thing when you get on a plane as a fighter, right, that makes this company, and you get on the plane and you're walking past first class and all the ring girls are sitting
God, that would piss me off.
It's got to be demoralizing to them. I've been blessed enough to make enough money to sure, I'll upgrade. But there's times where I'm like, I'm only going to LA. It's like an hour flight. I'm not upgrading to first class for an LA flight. Whatever. You know what I mean? But I've gotten on planes to get on, and I've gotten on as there's Joe Rogan sitting there, and there's, the ring girls there, and there's Buffer there. And you're walking past first class, and you're just like, man, that sucks.
That's a motherfucker bro.
Especially when you got guys that are the co-main event on the card, and you're walking past these ring card girls. Sometimes what's even worse is when you getting on a plane and you're waiting to get on the plane and you're checking your Instagram and you see the ring card girls are flying private.
Dude.
Yeah. And I'm not knocking them.
More power repeated hits in the nuts.
And for the athlete that is making this all possible, it's really upsetting.
Yeah.
It's got to be frustrating.
Take away your gear. On top of that.
Yeah, right.
With other deals.
People don't seem to understand what that Reebok deal did. That Reebok deal killed between $60,000 to $80,000 every fight I made.
What? Damn, dude.
Yep. Easily $60,000 to $80,000.
Whoa.
So now, when I was there, my last fight with them was the Reebok deal. I only had one fight with them under the Reebok deal. I made $5,000. I had 10 fights in the UFC. I made $5,000.
$5,000
for a fight? $5,000.
Wow, dude.
That's insane.
Horrible, man.
Whereas before that, you were making...
I was making $60,000 to $80,000 just in sponsors. Just in sponsors. That's not counting my purse.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Do you think this move to Bellator was really after that whole deal went down? Do you think it was more appealing? That way?
My move to Bellator was strictly because I knew Scott Coker. I'd had a relationship with Scott Coker. Scott Coker is the reason why I got into Pride. When I wasn't with the UFC anymore, when they didn't have a lightweight division, he's the one that got me into Pride. I got paid good money for that fight back in the day, more than any of the other guys had made. Then I came back and he started Strikeforce. He gave me a great contract. I was making more than I had, almost triple what I had made in the UFC fighting guys like Eze Edwards, Hermes Franca, being the number one fighter in the world. He paid me more money. And he had broke down the rule, literally what he was going to do with Strikeforce. I'm going to sign Frank Shamrock, Kung Lee, and they're going to fight. I'm going to sign you, Josh. I'm going to sign Gilbert Melendez, and you guys are going to fight. Okay? And then I'm going to build everything around you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what he did.
Cool. Wow.
So how do you get mad at someone who's actually a stand-up guy and says and does exactly what he said he was going
to
do?
Wow. Right. Now, the counter-argument, of course, from people who represent the UFC, they'd say, well, hey, we make it all possible. If it wasn't for us, it wouldn't be this big. And then you hear them say things like, we've got these other stars who make shit tons of money, right? We're paid, Ronda Rousey all this money. We paid, Conor McGregor all this money. What's your counter to that?
I love Ronda Rousey. Yeah. I love Conor McGregor. I think they're amazing for the sport. I'm all for them making that money. Okay, I just don't see why the other guys can't make a little bit more.
I was just going to say there's probably a huge discrepancy between them.
Oh, massive.
And then the next top five.
Oh, it's like less than 0.01%. You know, so if you want to take like the guys in the NFL, sure, maybe only like say 5% or like less than that make, you know, what Tom Brady makes and those guys make. I get that. LeBron, he's making the most. Okay, everyone understands.
Yeah.
I get
top
those
guys. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's two or three of those people in the UFC on a 500 person roster. Mm-hmm. You know, there's only two or three of them. In the NBA, they're all fucking millionaires.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, Even the practice squad guys for the NFL make more than these guys make.
Yeah.
The practice squad.
Yeah.
Man, we talking about practice?
You talking about practice?
You talking about practice? You know what I mean? Like, even these guys, even those guys are making more than these guys that are fighting their ass off. Mm-hmm. What people don't understand is that I grew up on the east side of San Jose, here in San Jose. Mm-hmm. Okay, I went to Mayfair back when it was called Mayfair, and now it's called Cesar Chavez. And I went to Matson for a year, and then I went to Joseph George. And you know what I mean? Like, I grew up on the east side. You know where Pink Elephant and King and Story is?
Yeah.
I grew up right there. Literally one block away from Pink Elephant, the Mercado, the Pal Stadium. I grew up right there. You know, I used to walk to school. Grandmother used to watch me walk to school from the sidewalk because we lived on the same street as Mayfair and Matson. I grew up right there, man. Yeah. Like, we came from it, like, she'd wake me up and make oatmeal. Like, that was, I had oatmeal every morning for breakfast, man, or beans and rice with some eggs. Like, dude, that was my life.
Yeah.
Like, that's, so the fact that now that I'm able to make a little bit of money and be able to do these things, I'm like, man, I'm not having beans and rice no more. Fuck that shit. You know, but it, you know, it's good with my enchiladas and tacos, you know, but I'm not having it for breakfast and dinner, you know, but, these guys have learned, they've come up the way that I came up, and I know the struggles. I know exactly what they're going through. Mm. And I feel bad for them because the UFC has shifted to stars. And the reason why I feel like they shifted to stars is because they don't have the control like they did over Chuck and Tito. And, you know, because they had they didn't control Chuck, but Dana had a relationship with Chuck that gave him a little bit more leeway to do what he wanted. He knew that if they told Chuck, like, hey, can you do this appearance for me? Really, I need you to come through for me. He'd be like, yeah, sure. Because, you know, Chuck was a stand-up guy. Chuck's one of my best friends, man. Nice. I say in the industry at all, Chuck's one of my best friends.
He's one of my favorites.
Yeah,
him and Randy were two of my absolute favorites.
Yeah. You know?
What kind of advice, if there's someone coming up and trying to get into this sport and do it professionally, What advice would you give them to be able to for them to make the most money? Obviously, people say win fights, but that's not always true, right? Because you've got people who don't have as good of records, who aren't, you know, fighting for championships, that just earn a shit ton of money because they have a high draw. Like, what would you recommend to people?
Let me ask you this: do you guys watch Sage Northcutt?
No. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's like it's like a karate style kid.
Yeah, he's that young,
good looking, shredded kid,
shredded. You know. Yeah. But how would you feel? He's got like two or three fights, I think, in the UFC. Yeah. I think he's got four now. Okay. But I think he's 2-2 or 3-1 or 1-3. Mm. Sorry, he's got one win or two wins.
Yeah.
You know, anyways, how would you feel if you were let's just say you were one of the guys that were lightweight, you're like one of the top guys, and he's making 50-50 and you're making 43-43? Mm.
Yeah.
How would you feel?
Yeah,
like, let's just say I'm ranked in the top 20. Yeah, this kid's not ranked in the top 20.
It's not about the sport at that point. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a sport anymore. It's like you're literally pushing guys in front of me that don't deserve to be there.
It's because they're marketable or whatever.
They're
going
supposed
for that,
to be marketable,
right?
Yeah. But let's talk. I want to see. I'm talking about fighters, man.
Yeah.
Like, you want to be a fucking fighter? Let me see you be a fucking fighter. Okay. When you find guys that lose the same way every time, you know they're not a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
You guys understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. If the guy gets kicked to the body and he runs to the fence, every time he gets hurt, he runs to the fence and covers up and puts his hand out and waits for the ref to stop it. That's someone who he's not a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who just basically gets tapped every time, almost same submission or whatever it is. Okay. That's not a fighter. Okay. Sure. Maybe you're athletic. Sure. Maybe you're someone that has all the looks and all the attributes to be a fighter, but you don't have it mentally. You're not a fighter.
How prevalent is that in the industry? Do you think that there's a lot of that? How, like, a majority, half? How much of that?
Well, I think it's a new generation of guys that are coming up. I don't want to call them the millennials of MMA,
but we're going to go ahead and do
term,
that.
You know what I mean? It's kind of a because what it is, they jumped in when they saw the money and the stardom was going up.
Yeah.
They jumped in. Now they're in it, which is good, and they have the look and the flashiness and everything. But then when it comes down, when the going gets tough, they just kind of they kind of find ways out. Mm. You know what I mean?
So when you say that makes me think that
man, what's that? We're going to see this transition in the next 5 or so years of like kids that were like in their young teens that have built like a large social media presence that come into the UFC that are actually going to probably get a fast track towards, you know, the top and getting paid well because they can. I meet Dana White and I've already got 40,000 followers that follow me because I've built this social media presence, whether I'm good looking or fit or I know somebody. But now I have that going for me and now I'm in the sport. There's probably a good chance I'm going to make more money because of that. Is that true?
Yes. But let me ask you this. How does a guy like Rory McDonald, after a fight like he had with Robbie Lawler, get let go? Yeah, didn't get let go, but was able to even fucking leave.
Yeah, yeah, why?
How are you even able to negotiate with another company?
Why did that happen?
You got to be out of your fucking mind.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of talk right now that Jacare and Musashi are both on their way out to Bellator.
Wow.
They Jacare fights, he fights this weekend.
Okay.
He fights this weekend. He's on his last fight of his contract. Musashi has one more fight left, or he just fought, 2 weeks ago. Mm. I think he's done now. So he's going to go and negotiate. He's got like a 60-day non-negotiate. He's got to only negotiate with the UFC for 60 days. So you have that period where you have exclusive rights to negotiate with just the UFC. But he's going to wait those 60 days. He's already come out verbally and said, like, I'm waiting. I'm gonna see the free market agent, which they all should do. Mm-hmm. 100% they should all do. That's exactly what I did. I think if there's two companies, find out exactly which one's willing to pay you the most. I don't give a shit who you are. Right. Okay, if you're an athlete, fucking invest in yourself. There's nobody else going to invest in you but you. Fucking fight your fights. See what the market is. If it's not there, there's no way the UFC's letting them go. Like, if you're like, hey, the offer of shit money still going to be on the table.
Right.
They're not going to let you go. The shit money's still going to be there. I just chose to go with Bellator because the money was substantially more. Not just substantially more, but the show money was substantially more. So let's just say if you had a chance to make 60 and 60 or 70 and 70. You understand what that is?
Yeah, 70 to fight, each, 70 to win or whatever.
Yes, exactly. So okay. 60,000 to show up and fight, make weight, show up and fight. Then another 60,000 if I win. That's a big drop if you don't fucking win. And then on top of it, did you train any less hard for that fight?
No, of course not.
Exactly. So then second though too, is what happens if I get poked in the eye and it goes to a fucking no contest? I don't get paid the win money. If it's a draw, you don't get paid the win money. If it's a no contest or a legal growing shot or something like that, you don't get paid the win money. So you're both fighters don't get paid the win money. So you're fucking ripping them off again. We're Bellator's contracts, and I'm not just saying this. This is how Strikeforce was as well. Is that they are, they're heavy on the show money. So like if I show up and fight, I'm getting $120,000 or $200,000 to show up and fight. And then like a $30,000 win bonus, you know, or no win bonus, but a finishing bonus. If I knock you out or submit you, I get a $100,000 finishing bonus. Like you're talking, it gives me incentive to push and try and get the finish, but I'm still getting paid fucking great money.
Yeah. I was just going to say, until you said that, I was going to say, well, then I would be worried that some guys would just, well, whatever, I'm not going to train very hard because I don't care if I win because I have such a big purse, so I get what the UFC would do there. But then you said that right there, that you get a purse for...
Yeah, your show money is higher, which I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the show money is higher, so people just don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then if I turn around and say, hey, I'll give you another, say, 50 grand if you get a finish.
Yeah, it's...
If you get a submission, you're going to fight harder.
Oh, yeah.
Not just a win, a finish. If you get a finishing bonus, I mean, fuck.
Right.
Well, I think...
You gotta go for it.
I think today, you know, you can be a really smart, I guess, businessman with yourself because of things like social media and whatnot. Like, I look at, like we're in fitness. We're in the fitness industry. And back in the day, if you were, I don't know, Mr. Olympia or... You could make a lot of money, and you probably made more money than everybody else because you were first place. Today, the highest paid athletes in fitness are the ones with the most social media followers. So I'm wondering if fighters can start to figure that out as well. So although you go in there and maybe you're entertaining, or when they interview you, you know, you talk a certain way or whatever, just so you get those followers and build yourself as a business, and that might give you some autonomy. You know what I mean? Then you have the power.
I agree with you 100%. I think if I was just, your original question was, what would I tell somebody who is coming up in the sport? In this generation, I would say you need to film and have someone archive everything that you've done, okay? And not just for a later date, But because as you're going through your workouts, from everything, the most views and the most viewership stuff that I get is things that I'm doing in my personal life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'm not, I don't like to show, I don't share my personal life with anyone. But mm-hmm. when it comes to my training, when it comes to my running the mountains, when it comes to my mountain biking, things like that, that's fine. But my home life is my home life and it's separate from my family. You won't see me at my family Easter party posting pictures and things like that.
Well, that's the difference between our generation and the younger one. We don't post like our kids and shit like that a lot.
Exactly.
But that's what everybody does now.
Yeah, and I actually get like disturbed when I see like friends of mine, they're posting pictures of their kids. I'm like, dude,
that's funny.
Random people. I literally have had in San Jose, I've had people just knock on my door, hey, can I get an autograph?
Oh shit.
My home. I'm like, how the fuck did you find me?
Yeah.
Wow. Like, I've paid all the dues. I actually went on the internet and I've actually had my stuff removed from everything on the internet. You can't find me anymore. But it only lasts a year and you gotta redo it again. Every year you got to do it. I'm like, fuck, how did someone find? Because I'm getting mail at my, every once in a while I get mail at my house.
God, that would trip me. Wow. Fuck
fan
out.
Mail. So what I do with the fan mail, I don't send it back because then they know that they had the right address. Yeah. So I don't send it back. I'm like, no. But anyways, I'm trying to keep my life personal. But as a young athlete, I would tell them to just archive everything. Like just record anything you possibly can. You know, and let people view it. Like, but I would start it on a YouTube channel mm-hmm. where you can make money doing it that way as well. Mm-hmm. Once you hit a certain amount of subscribers, once you get a certain amount of views, because one of your things may just go viral. Like my buddy, Shane Fazin, who does fight tips. Mm-hmm. He just did that video yesterday about the guy being drugged across the jiu-jitsu match. That was his video.
Oh, wow.
So he did that video, fucking went viral. Boom. Like...
This and it was just, he was making fun of the United.
He was making fun of the United where the guy's being drugged like through the thing and he's just showing the escapes. Jiu-jitsu escapes.
What a great video.
That's brilliant.
How to attack from that position. It was fucking awesome.
Wait. These aren't this wasn't the Gracie ones because they made a video too. Was it?
No. So it was, but he did it with them.
Oh, he was the
so
one
that's
that
was saying, yeah.
That video's fucking brilliant. I was cracking up when I was watching that
exactly.
one. That's excellent. Yeah, how you were just talking about how you film a lot of your training and stuff. Has it changed through the years now that you've been doing this for so long? Does your training look different now than it used to?
100%, because as you get older, you know, your training's got to change. Your body changes on a weekly basis.
What's the difference?
So some of the differences is that, look, when I was 28 to 32, I would just train like a fucking animal. Mm-hmm. There was never a moment where I wasn't fucking training. Mm-hmm. Like I would wake up at 6 a.m. I'd fucking go do an assault bike class at my own gym. I would just fucking train as hard as I could. Go back home and just eat, sleep, you know, shower, get up for noon training with the fighters, fucking train 2 hours with them, whether it was wrestling, jiu-jitsu, sparring, whatever it was, you know, and then I would come back and I'd go back home, eat, shower, sleep, and then wake back up 6:30 at night. I'd go back to the gym and just fucking train until like 9 o'clock, 9:30 at night.
And whether just did
it was,
this all the time.
Whether it was kickboxing, bike workout, savage. You know, or sprints on the machine or whatever it was. You know, and it would change, you know, like throughout the week. But as I got older, it was like, okay, look, 2 workouts a day and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Because your body just can't do it, man. I'm like, no matter how clean I eat, no matter how, you know, I even brought a nutritionist in like that stay with me and live with me. I don't know if you guys know who Dan Leith is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he does Lockhart Leith. So he's the nutritionist for myself, Cain Velasquez, DC, all these guys. Okay. And so I've had, I had him actually just move in with me. He makes, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, everything. He gets you all sorted out. And he lives with you while you're in camp.
Oh,
and
wow.
So he just takes care of everything you need.
That's awesome.
And because there's certain times you need to have your macros, certain times you need to have, you know, your sugar, certain times you need to have your carbs more on the certain ratios too. Like after you do a hard workout, you want more of a 3-to-1 ratio, sugar to carbs and that type of thing. So he keeps track of all that because when you're in camp, you want it to be mindless. You know, I want someone to fucking do everything.
You just
want to
focus on the training, right?
You just want to focus on the training. Like I can't, my mind can't be working, you know, and trying to get the best out of my performance if it's not focused on the one thing I'm supposed to be working on.
Now, with your training, do you put more time now into things like mobility, flexibility, or like massage and that kind of shit now?
So with the massage, yes. But the mobility, no. And I hate to say it. It's the worst fucking thing ever. Something happened when I hit like 34. my flexibility just shit, took a shit on me.
Really?
It's not as what it used to be. And, you know, it just sucks, man. I don't know what it is. I need to spend more time on the actual mobility stuff.
Got to be hanging out with Brink more, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he's always on me about it.
I'm sure he's drilling you on that.
Always on me about, oh, you got to do this. I can't even fucking touch my back. You know, it's like, I got to get off the toilet, put one leg up on the thing and try and wipe my ass that way. You know, it's like, can't do the reach back anymore. It doesn't happen, man. It's crazy.
Now, what are the advantages that an older fighter would have over a younger fighter? Because there's got to be some advantages too. Because I remember Randy Couture was whooping the shit out of these young kids,
right?
And I'm sure there was disadvantages, but there's got to be some advantages.
So what I try to say about with Randy and with Dan Henderson, they're anomalies. So what happens? Randy was so good at wrestling, and his game plan was always the same. If you ever watch his fights, they were always the same.
Yeah.
It was punch, punch, clinch, press you to the fence. Get the takedown if you can. If you can't get it, just keep you against the fence, beating you up. He never stood on the outside.
I used to hate that because I was a Chuck fan, man. I was a diehard Chuck fan, and those fights would just drive me crazy. Like, fuck, you know he's going to do that, dude.
Exactly. But no one could stop it.
Yeah.
Because his whole game plan was to do that one thing, and it's been his game plan ever since he started fighting. But and this, the thing with Dan Henderson, sure, he was the same way, but as he got older, he started relying a lot on just his power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just something I don't give a fuck if he's 60. His fucking power is still going to be there. The guy's an animal.
Is that true? We hear that. Like, that's the last thing you lose is your strength.
The last thing you lose is your power, yep. Wow. And for smaller guys, that's why there's such a big turnover in sports for smaller guys, because the first thing to go is your speed.
Once your speed's gone,
the younger generation of fighters
are going to
fuck you up.
What a great point. As a heavyweight, you can probably carry a heavier classes. You can probably stay a little bit longer because you can rely on that power.
See, I've experienced some of this before because I've actually, you know, I've done a little bit of sparring. And if you've ever been hit by like a 50-year-old boxer, you see the guy and you're like, oh, he's a 50-year-old boxer. And he'll fucking kill you. Like, he'll hit you like a car hit you, and you're like, well, this
is... He hits the soul out of your body.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, but I guess it's true. That's because you always hear that, right?
Have you seen that video that's viral with the old boxing guy? He gets in the cage, or he gets in the ring with this guy, this younger kid.
Yeah, I
think it's in Russia or something like that.
Puts his ass to sleep.
And he fucking slaps him. Just puts him out, man. The kid's like giving the look, like whatever. Then the old man hits him, boom, boom, a couple big shots. And people are kind of like giggling and laughing, like, oh, you know, poor old man. And next thing you know, he just fucking slaps the guy, sits him through the rope. And they have to like pull him off. They have to pull the old guy off the young guy. They're like pulling him back, and he's like, ah, whatever. You know, it's like the old Thai guys.
Whippersnapper.
Yeah, it's like the old Thai guys that are like, okay, like you're going to go spar with the young kid. So the guy like throws the fucking cigarette out of his mouth. Steps on it, walks in there, and just knocks the kid out.
So, are there any advantages though to be able to, do you think?
Well,
like, are you smarter? I would think the
mental confidence,
the experience,
right? You probably walk in like no big deal. I've been in here a million times.
Yeah, the experience does play a factor. You pretty much have seen it all. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the game changes a little bit, but doesn't change that drastically to understand. But I think I wouldn't say there's any advantages other than that. I mean, like. Just the experience. I mean, if you're an older fighter, you just got to use what you know and use what you know best. Like, that's the thing. It's like, don't try and do anything outside the realm because you're fighting a younger guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the issue with the thing with the younger fighters, the older fighters with the younger ones, you have to weather their storm because they're going to exert so much energy so fast in that first round. You got to get through that first round.
Yeah.
Okay. And once you get through that first round, that's when you slow the pace of the fight down to your level of experience where you can just, okay, I got this.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the psychology of fighting. How important is that to be able to win?
Well, it depends on which one you're talking about. You're talking about the millennial MMA guys, or are you talking about the ones that are real fighters?
Well, anyway, like any of them, like what is a winning psychology? Like what are some of the challenges going in? I mean, I've never fought in MMA. I've competed in grappling, you know, competitions, jiu-jitsu and judo as a kid, and I distinctly remember being exhausted going into my first match because I was so too hyped. I was too hyped and too nervous and whatever going in that I would just get exhausted, like way worse stamina than I did when I would train. And I couldn't figure it out. And as I got older, I figured it out because I was too amped. Like, let's talk about some of the psychology going into a fight and what are some of the things that you need to, I guess, look out for or focus on.
So if someone is just coming up, or what I try to tell people is that you're never going to be able to train as hard as you're going to fight. Because I could spar as hard as I can. So like, let's just say I get ready for a 3-round fight. And I get a fresh guy every round and they come in, they're fucking world beaters, right? They just come in, they're just trying to take my head off. Doesn't matter. I'm still not going to fight at the pace that I'm going to fight if I was fighting somebody else in the ring, for real. It's just something happens when you get out there.
Different switch.
It's just a different switch on both ways. There's nothing you can do about it. But you can try and do the best you can out on the track, you know, in your workouts, you know, and whether whatever type of workouts you do. And in your sparring, you just try to always push the pace, always keep the grind on. But you're never going to get that true fight feeling until you get in there and fight. Mm-hmm. And like you were saying, you were exhausted before your tournament. But the reason being is because it's just lack of experience. Mm-hmm. Learning how to rest and learning how to relax right before. That's the biggest thing. I mean, shit, I've been fighting for almost 20 years now. I mean, like I go out now and it's like, I don't even trip now. Like I have, you know, I've got my boys in the locker room with me. We're just jumping rope, talking shit, you know, and then I get ready, walk out there, fucking get it on and move on, collect my check and bounce out.
Do you remember a transition of that? Like, was there a time when you were super nervous, overthinking, and then you kind of something happened or you just over time?
Yeah, I would say it was that way for all my fights up until after my first fight in the UFC and I got the jitters out of like, you know what, I've made it. You know, like once you're in the UFC and you've got that first win in the UFC, it's like, oh, I fucking made it. You know, because until you get that first win, which most of the time, at the time, was only the biggest organization in the world. You know, it still is, but I'm saying that
it was like the only one.
It's the only one. Yeah. So once you got that win, and you're like, oh, fuck, like a sense like a huge monkey off your back, just a sense of relief.
Do people, knowing that you're a fighter and you're recognizable, do people mess with you in real life?
No, not anymore. When I was younger, they did.
Really? Mm.
Because the sport wasn't as prevalent as it is now, so it wasn't as big. So when people would actually, like, oh, yeah, I heard you're a fighter, and they would talk shit, like, oh, you do that UFC shit or whatever, you know, like they would say things like that. But now, fuck, you go to all the clubs around San Jose, all the fucking guys that work the door, they're all trained jiu-jitsu, and they all fucking, they all know who the fuck I am. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I don't have any problems. Like, literally, it's like, hey, get that guy out of here because he's fucking with me. And they're like, yeah, sure, no problem, Josh. Get out, dude.
Have you had to do anything? Like, has anybody ever actually?
When I was younger, I mean, like, really? I got in a lot of fights when I was younger, man. Really? It's very unfortunate.
Even before you were training? Like, when you were younger?
Especially before I was training.
Really? Mm. Is that what motivated you strongly? Were you bullied? Were you like a small
so
kid?
So when I was young, I grew up on the east side. I'm like half white, half Mexican. I grew up on the east side. What do you think? I look more white than I am Mexican. Yeah. So I got bullied all the time. It's like people trying to bully me around. Then I got into wrestling and, you know, and then I moved away and it was like, okay. But in Northern Idaho, it's predominantly white. Mm. So here I'm white. Up there, I'm a spick.
Wow.
So yeah, it depends on what it is.
I'm the same way. So I'm Mexican and German. And depending on if I'm with white people, I'm a spick. If I'm with Mexican people, then I'm a, you know what I'm saying? Exactly. It's like I'm a Guido. So it's like you're fucking one of, or not a Guido, but a freaking Ringo. Honky.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one or the other. You know, it's so funny. Don't fit in with anybody that way.
Exactly.
Did you have a time like growing up where, you know, where you're training? You know, you fought someone and you beat them up or you kept them from beating you up that really catapulted this like, oh, I love this or this is something I'm going to keep going. Is there like a staple moment or fight that happened? I'm talking about the street, not inside the...
Oh, you're talking about the street.
Yeah, I'm talking about something that
happened. No, because street fights is a completely different mentality. Mm. You never think about...
Street fights suck.
Yeah, there's no fucking ref.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, just so you guys get an awareness of like, where I come from, like with my dad was one of the guys, like, hey, I had a girlfriend in high school when I was living in Idaho. Her and I had split up and I was a TA, like a teacher's assistant, and I was grading papers and she was walking through the hall and she's like cussing at me while I'm grading papers. The door was open. Teacher wasn't in the room at the time. And her and I go out, I said, hey, you need to get out of here. I walk out to the hall and you need to get out of here. I got kids in here. You got to get out of here. So she starts cussing at me. She slaps me. Well, I have couple girlfriends that in the time, the high school that we were in, there was theater seating, but there was no doors that went into the classrooms. So I had two of my girlfriends that were just friends that they saw her slap me because they were looking in the hall. You could look back into the hall from the top desk up on the top of the tier seating. So they see that happen and they walk out and they beat the shit out of her.
Oh shit.
So they beat her up and I didn't do anything. I was like, whatever. But anyways, I got sent home. So I was like, hey, you were part of this whole thing. You got suspended. The other two girls got suspended. My ex-girlfriend got suspended. Well, anyways, I get a call from at my house. I get home and I'm like, I told my dad, I didn't do anything, you know, this and that. I get a call from at my house from this guy who liked my ex-girlfriend. He's like, hey, I'm coming over to your house. You know, we're going to fucking do this. You know, you like to push girls around, huh? You think it's funny that your girlfriends are beating her up. And this, I'm like, dude, who the fuck are you? Like, So we get in this altercation. He was on the phone. He's like, I'm coming to your house. So I gave him my address. All right, come on over. Because that's the way my dad always told me, like, hey, if you're going to fight, fucking bring it home. You know? Yeah. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Let's settle this.
He's like, yeah, call your buddies. And I was like, I got off the phone. I called my dad. I was like, hey, dad, come home. So dad comes home from work, you know, and my dad's one of those like gun toting, you know, Americans. I just got a fucking. So we walk, like, literally three carloads of fucking kids come.
Wow.
To my house.
Holy shit.
Trucks, you know, filled with the back, you know, you could still, up in Idaho, you could still ride in the back of the truck. So truckloads come, you know, three truckloads and cars come. You know, I've got like two or three of my buddies are there and my dad's there. And the kids start walking up and my dad walks out and, you know, the kid walks up and there's like a bunch of people behind him. And my dad just walks out and he's like, okay, look. And he like kind of lifts his shirt and he's like, look, you know, I got a gun. So he's like, hey, any of you guys, if anyone jumps in, you're going to get shot. Let it be a one-on-one fight and we're going to go our separate ways after the fight. And that's exactly what happened. Oh, so literally me and this kid just got into a fight right in the middle of the street. Boom. Neighbors came out, watched, fucking did our fight, went our separate ways. You
wow.
know,
that did they leave you alone after that?
No, we kind of had some issues and some, you know, confrontations after that as well, you know. But that's the kind of person that my family was. Like, even my mom is that way. Like, it was always kind of that way of like, hey, if you have an issue with me, I'll meet you at my house. We'll duke it out. When it's all said and done, it's done. Wow. Okay, move on.
So,
that's the way it should be.
So you had stuff happen to you here in San Jose, then you move over there, you had stuff happen to you.
Yeah.
Did this drive you and motivate you when you were wrestling and fighting to like, this is like, were you driven by that?
Yeah, but at the time there was no MMA, so I didn't know what it was driven by. I just didn't want to lose, you know? And that was the thing. Like, being, you want to ingrain your kids into being competitive. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no fucking participation trophies, man. You either win or you don't. You know, and if you're not first, you're last, right, Ricky Bobby? So, yeah. But that's really what I feel with these kids. Like, you should ingrain in them that you want to be the best. Because if everyone is equal, then what's the point of fucking trying to excel?
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you remember, like, when you kind of got the itch? I know you mentioned the when you started getting into jiu-jitsu with your little, actually having your little brother put you in a move. But what about, like, fighting and actually, like, situations like that? Was there a time where you're like, I kind of like this?
Yeah, I mean, like, just so you guys know, I lost my very first fight. Like, I went, I showed up, I paid $25 to fight.
Oh, wow.
I paid $25 and went to this local gym. Like, you know, we took a group of guys and went to this local gym, and I paid $25 to fight. And it was like, oh, okay, this is, it was like almost like a smoker, but it was a little bit more intense because we were wearing MMA gloves, no headgear, like mouthpiece, like, you know, shin guards. And like, that was it, man. Like, I don't even think I was wearing a cup at the time. You know, we went out there and we fought. You know, I lost that fight and I was like, man, maybe this isn't for me, you know, it sucks. And you know, and then I was just training like on a regular basis with some guys that I wrestled with in college at North Idaho College. And I got a call like on 3 days, 4 days notice, and I was living in North Idaho, and they called, and the fight was down in Boise, which is in Southern Idaho. And they said, hey, we want you to fight this guy. And I'm like, all right, cool. So how much are you going to pay? You know, if you're not going to pay, I'm not going to go. So they're like, yeah, we'll fly you down, put you in a hotel, give you $150. I'm like, fuck it. So I went down, I needed the money, I was fucking broke, you know, I mean, so I was like, all right, screw it. So I went down, fought, got a knockout in like 2 minutes, literally within like 3 weeks, hey, we got this other guy. So they wanted to get me beat, you know, but they kept calling and they kept paying. And I said, okay, well, this time I want 300. And they're like, all right, fine. So then I went from being the co-main event last time on 3 days notice, now I'm the main event, boom, 6 second knockout, head kick, done. Because I fought a wrestler, I knew he was a wrestler, all he wanted to do was wrestle me. Boom, knocked him out, done deal, ran around, like, got done. After that, I was like, you know what? Maybe there's something here. We might have something. So I trained, and then I moved back down here to California and started training with Bob Cook and Frank Shamrock and at AKA and stuff. And I was like, you know, so we just kept doing it. I kept training every night. I'd work from 6 to like 4 in the afternoon, get off work in Palo Alto and just drive all the way down here. You know, and just train until like 9:30 at night, just till the gym would close.
Yeah, I'd have to say, you know, I was a big fan of yours in the early days, you know, when I really be into MMA, and you were one of the first or one of the kind of original, like, true mixed martial artists. Mm-hmm. You know, in those days, you still had a lot of pure, you know, grapplers, pure strikers, and, you know, who were kind of good at the other stuff, but you seemed to be good at a lot of it. You know, you would knock people out or you would submit them, and you seem to be good at all angles. And you said you trained with Frank. I know Frank was probably the first.
I think he was the first.
Yeah.
So he was more of the first guy that was well-rounded. And when you're around people like that, and it makes it easier for you to realize that you need to be well-rounded. And I try to explain to people that I'm not good at any one thing. Like, I'm not great at any one thing. I'm good at, like, all of them. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm a good wrestler. I'm a good jiu-jitsu guy. I'm a good stand-up guy. But I'm not great at any of them. If I was to fight like a really good kickboxer, I'd fucking get mauled. Mm-hmm. You know, if I fought a really good jiu-jitsu guy, I'd fucking get just destroyed. You know, but if I fought a really good Olympic wrestler, I'd fucking get owned. You know what I mean? Like, but I'm really good at all of them.
So when you say that, what's your thoughts on what, all the hype around McGregor and Mayweather that's been going on for quite some time?
I think it's great. I honestly believe that it's great. I feel that he should have left the UFC out of the negotiations because it's not MMA, it's boxing. And when he got his boxing license, it becomes under the Muhammad Ali Act. There's no reason for him to be, for the UFC to be involved in negotiations at all. Okay, like for him. But I mean, with him, I feel like he's kind of a loyal guy. You see the way he is with his camp. You see the way he is with his wife and things like that. He's taking time off right now to focus on his baby was born and things mm-hmm. like that. I think that's a great thing for him. But there was no reason. He's bringing Dana along for the ride. But if Dana gets in the way, I don't think he'll have a problem saying, like, get the fuck out of the way. Mm-hmm. But during that process, what's going to happen, though, is that it could end up biting him in the ass because Dana's going to want a little bit more than what people don't understand. Like, Dana's going to want a bigger percentage of that. So I give an example is that a couple of the guys that I know, I won't mention names because I don't want to throw them under because they're still with the organization, but a couple of guys that I know, they had a deal done with Monster Energy Drink. And the Monster said, hey, we're going to pay you $180,000 for the year, okay? And you're going to fight 2-3 times a year. We're going to pay you $180,000 for the year. You rep our brand. We're going to be, you know, one of your main sponsors. Okay. Deal was pretty much done. UFC came and said, hey, that's our network of sponsors that we came. They went in and said, look, we're going to negotiate the deal for you. Literally like 2 weeks later, the deal came back. The fighter got $60,000 for the year.
Fuck, a third?
Where'd the rest of the money go?
Hmm.
Where the fuck do you think it went?
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? So that's like when you say, what are the positives and the negatives of what's going on now? That's a negative.
Yeah,
because
you bet.
Yeah, back in the day, we used to be able to negotiate those type of things. Sure, maybe they're sponsoring the UFC, but that doesn't mean that like we can't talk to them. Like right. You know, like that. What does that mean? Like when we bring our sponsors into the cage, they have to fill out the paperwork. You have all their contacts. Every time I bring a new sponsor into the cage, you get their contact information, and I know you fucking hit them up,
right.
And you say, hey, well, you know, if you want to sponsor the event, this and that, you know, like I know those things. That was part of the problem back when they were doing the sponsors. Our sponsors had to pay to sponsor us, even before the Reebok deal. So the way that happened was they were like, hey, we want to see your book. So let's just say I had Reebok as a sponsor before they were working with the UFC. They would say, hey, Reebok's going to sponsor you. Reebok had to fill out all this paperwork. They sent it into them. They called Reebok, and the UFC would call Reebok and say, hey, well, your books say you made $1.2 million last year. You know, well, we believe that it would have been less had your athlete not wore your stuff into our ring, into our cage. So we think we deserve $50,000 or $100,000 or whatever the percentage was that they were asking for your year revenue.
Wow.
How the fuck are you going to get away with that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what they were doing. So companies
it's
just
like the mob.
Yeah, companies stop sponsoring us because they're like, well, I got to pay the UFC 50 to 100 grand just to fucking talk to you.
Just to pay you.
To pay you
$5,000. To pay you.
I got to pay them fucking 50 to 100 grand to turn around and pay you $5,000, $10,000, $100,000, you know, $20,000, whatever it is. That's crazy, man. That was the negative at all. And then at the end, they did that for a couple of years. And then at the end, you turn around and slap Reebok on us and then fucking take away everything.
Hmm.
So you got paid $6-9 million for like a 4-year or 6-year deal with Reebok. And in return, you're paying the fucking athletes peanuts. Like guys like BJ Penn made fucking $40,000. That's it.
Yeah.
Dude, his deal with Ruka was fucking way better than that. I know Pat, the owner of Ruka, mm-hmm. okay? He's fucking always taking care of BJ. BJ and him are like fucking best buds. You know what I mean? Like BJ was the first fighter to ever like rep Ruka into the fucking cage and be like, hey, you know, like this is my boy. This is my buddy's brand. Like I'm going to do this for him. You know what I mean? Like that's just showing loyalty to where you came from. When you can't do that anymore, it's garbage.
It sounds like it can't. I mean, can it continue that way? If I feel like it'll fall off. You know what I mean? The wheels will fall off.
But this is what we have to understand is that okay, look, the Fox deal is about to come up for renewal. Okay, the Fox mm-hmm. TV deal. Mm-hmm. It's about to come up for renewal. So what's going on is they sold it to WME, right? William Morris Entertainment is who they sold it to. Well, the guys that they rep are also like Tom Brady and guys that, and also I want to say Robert Kraft, the guy who owns the Patriots. Okay. So he's got the connection in with the NFL. So what I think they're going to do is they're going to turn around and say, like, hey, we have all these high clouded guys that now own the UFC. We're gonna re-ink another deal. So $4.4 billion is what they paid for the UFC. Now they're going to turn around and go to the Fox and say, okay, let's re-ink. As soon as they re-ink the deal, they've made their money back. So they'll do another 5-year, 7-year deal with Fox. Boom. Their $4.4 million is already made back. Doesn't matter what they do from on. They're like, fuck, we could care less what happens to the fucking promotion now. We've made our fucking money back. Done deal. In the process, they gave
their
money.
They could have shit fighters. Hardly anybody watches.
They don't give a fuck.
Well, then how much of the revenue then is like pay-per-view and stuff? Like how does that work? Like,
so that each fighter is negotiated differently. So like some fighters will be like $2 per pay-per-view buy. Some fighters are $1 per pay-per-view buy. And then it's negotiated based on like how many views. So over 250,000 views, you get paid $1. Mm-hmm. Over 500,000 views, you get paid $2. So it depends on the fighter as well. Like Kane's contract will be different from DC's contract.
Sure.
And Luke's contract will be different from all three of theirs. You know, and then like mine would be different than the rest
of theirs. So how important then is like a badass agent that goes in and actually negotiates?
Has nothing to do with being an agent though in the UFC. Because
they don't let you, right?
No, they don't. I mean, they do. You can have an agent, but the problem is there's no negotiation with them. That was the biggest reason why these guys are fucking leaving. Yeah. They're like, there's no negotiation. When I walked in, like, let's just say this. When I walk into the UFC and I sit down, they say, okay, look, you're a top 10 guy. Well, this is the standard for top 10 guys because they make the market when it comes to their organization. I'm going to pay you 60 and 60, 63 and 63 and like per fight, you know, and then you're going to go up. If you win, you're going to go up 66, 66, 68, 68, whatever, you know. So that's what your pay is going to go up. But if you, the negotiation, there is no negotiation. That's what it is. If you don't fucking like it, go fight somewhere else. Wow. And they know it. They know it. Like, hey, because every kid growing up, their dream was to fight in the UFC, and they're going to hold that against you.
Wow.
Like, not like, man, we're so excited to have you.
They definitely
you.
Have the power.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you. Fucking, I'm excited to get you in the cage. It's going to be fucking amazing. Nope. They're like, look, motherfucker, we're doing you a favor.
You gotta think with organizations like Bellator and stuff coming up and continuing to gain traction and grow, that sooner or later it's gotta get somewhat competitive. I know UFC, they want to be the NFL of fighting, and they probably look at everybody else as like Canadian league or something like that. But it's looking like, you know,
it's coming around. I think if Jacare and Musashi leave, there's that. But then you also have, you know, like this whole buyout. What happened was one of the first things they did, they got rid of Matt Hughes and Chuck Liddell because they were on the payroll. Mm-hmm. And so they got rid of them. That put a bad taste in everyone's mouth. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You know, and I know a lot of employees that were working for them for years, like basically from the time that the Fertitas had bought the company, they're no longer with them.
Yeah, I feel like they would just buy them. You know what I mean? Like if you're an organization, you're coming up because that's what they've done so far is they'll just buy the organization. And continue their reign.
They got to be careful because they were in. I don't know if they still are. I got to actually look it up. But they were in a class action lawsuit against being like basically in a monopoly. Mm. And then Bellator came around, and then Rizin started in Japan. ONE FC is over in China. But they were saying, "Oh no, we're not a monopoly." Because for a moment there, after they bought Strikeforce, it was like you bought all of our competition. Like, oh, what about Bellator? We're like, dude, fucking Bellator until Cobra got there was fucking non-existent.
Yeah.
I had no idea who was fighting. I didn't even know who the fuck their champions were. No one cared about them. You know, they were on every Friday. Did you ever fucking stay home on a Friday and watch them? I sure the fuck didn't. And I'm a fighter. I'm like, I cared to see what those guys are doing. Mm-hmm. You know, so it really depends on what the market provided. But they at the time, Bellator didn't provide any type of market to anybody. It was horrible.
Wow.
Dude, what's your prediction then? Do you see that happening? Do you see it becoming more competitive? Do you see UFC just kind of continuing to muscle people? Like, I feel like ever since that Reebok deal happened, you're starting to hear a lot more backlash from it. What's your prediction?
Well, I think the luster of the Reebok deal has gone away. Fighters now have just accepted the fact that they're going to make shit when it comes to sponsors, which is unfortunate. But fighters will always do that. You want to know why? Because they came from a background like mine where they just don't have money.
Wow.
Like, that's a great point. It's so hard. It's so hard for...
Yeah, because you're pulling from a pool of people who... like nobody, like you rarely will you see someone who comes from like super wealthy upbringing and kind of has everything done for them, or they're like, yeah, I want to fight professionally. It usually doesn't happen that way.
Are there any top fighters like that? I actually don't. Are there
BJ Penn
was like that.
BJ was like that. Stage Northcutt was like that.
Yeah. Okay.
But you said top fighter, so I don't want to.
No, just BJ Penn.
But BJ Penn. Yeah. So
BJ's rare too, because he was actually a fighter. Like, yeah, you're like, why is this guy fighting like this? You know?
Yeah. But the other thing too, as well, is like his brothers were all very active in jiu-jitsu. You know, so BJ was the first American black belt to ever win worlds.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then his brothers though were all really good. Like his brother was a blue belt. When his brother was a blue belt, he won worlds.
Okay.
His brother JD was fucking. His brother JD was actually probably the most. Fighter out of all of them.
Really?
But then he had a real bad neck injury, so he just couldn't get through a whole camp and actually fight. But man, that guy was a fucking savage on the floor.
Oh, wow.
Insane, man.
Yeah, fight sports in general have that history. Even boxing, you know, has that history where you see these fighters coming up.
Because you need that grit, dude. And it's, I'm
well, that's
sorry,
why, like, who chooses to fight?
If you were growing up and you've had a lot of things handed to you, even if you got great parents, I'd feel like it's tough to install that grit that you need, you know?
Well, these guys are pulling from a market of guys that just, they don't have anything. And the ones that don't have anything, they're going to do whatever it is. Let me give you an example. So I don't know the well-offness of like Clay Guida, okay? But when him and I had fought, there was a couple deals where I was talking with some sponsors for them to sponsor me. And when they were sponsoring, they said, yeah, well, look, we're going to sponsor Clay as well. They're like, look, all we're doing for him is closing a banner. I'm like, fuck no, I fought in the UFC, I fought in Pride. No fucking way I'm only letting you give me clothes and banner. Mm-hmm. I got enough fucking clothes. You pay me enough, I'll buy my own damn clothes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that wasn't me. But that's the thing. You're pulling from guys that, like, they really don't have much.
Yeah.
So when they don't have much, they'll do whatever it takes to get their foot in the door. You know, so like, sure, you want to give me clothes, you want to give me supplements, you know, you want to give me a year of supplements. I'm like, I don't do that. I buy my own fucking supplements. You know, you pay me enough money, I'll buy my own shit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's what fighters don't seem to understand. They'll lowball stuff to get it done because they don't have the money at the time.
Yeah.
So they're like, what, you're going to make my banner? Well, banner costs like $600 to make.
Right.
You know, if you go to a print shop, it costs like $600 to make. So it's like unfortunate that these kids, they're like, I don't have the money to make the banner, but I can't make money if I don't have a banner. So what do I do? You know, so you have this company make a banner for you. You know, you get supplements from them, whatever it is, you know, to get you through your next camp because you can't afford to buy supplements because they didn't fucking pay you. You know, instead, you should have taken the money.
It's very similar. You know, I don't know how familiar you are with the whole bodybuilding, men's physique, bikini world right now that's exploding, right? And because I was a diehard fan of UFC and I watched that whole growth of that, the transition with Reebok, and then I was somebody who you know, got into, you know, bodybuilding or men's physique and got up to the professional level and then realized, like, holy shit, it's very, very similar. And you have these big companies, they come in and they prey on all of them.
Yeah.
And they know they have all this leverage that this kid just wants to be on a cover of a magazine so fucking bad and just wants to say he's sponsored so bad. Like, they take it's like such a big deal just to say you're sponsored because they
put it in your bio here.
Yeah. Like,
sponsored by
and the sponsorships take advantage of it. So they give these kids like some t-shirts and like 20% commission on what they sell. And it's like, oh my God, the markup on supplements like 400% as it is. So you're giving them like a percentage to hustle their supplements. And some free shirts, like, and it's just, it's turning into this culture where, you know, all these kids are trying so hard to get involved, and then they get in it and they don't realize, like, oh shit, just getting here doesn't make me a millionaire or make me rich forever.
It's the rules of supply and demand always, that's just what they are. And I, you know, you blew my mind right now when you said, you know, they're pulling from these kids who grew up with nothing, who this is their opportunity, this is their one opportunity to succeed at life or to do something for themselves because they don't have any other opportunities. So you have a large supply of these kids who are like, I'll fucking do anything. And it's just the way it is. If only they knew, right?
Yeah, and you're not even, see, like, I feel that the bikini stuff or the whatever, the that's more of an American-based thing. I mean, sure, I'm sure that it's worldwide, but I'm saying it's more of a, you're pulling from fighters. They're it's worldwide.
Yeah.
You're taking guys from Sweden, guys from
the Philippines,
Germany, and Philippines, you know, China, everywhere, because they fucking don't have anything. You're pulling from guys that literally, some of them live in third world countries, you know, but all they want to do is train and be an athlete. Sure, they want free shirts. Sure, they want supplements. They're like, they don't have no fucking clue how to use the supplements or what they're doing. You know, like, part of when I brought in Dan Leith to come in and live with me, he's like, okay, look, I was like, when are you taking this? When are you taking this? I told him all the stuff I was telling him what I was taking and what times. He's like, okay, well, look, you can't take this during this time because you're actually, it's counteracting what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Now you give that to someone who has no fucking clue, that has no education on any of it. And I've been doing this my whole life. And I thought this was the way it was supposed to be done. And he's like, comes in and sits me down and goes, this isn't right. No, like you're actually hurting yourself when you actually drink this before the workout. Mm. Then you're hurting yourself when you drink this or eat this right after your workout. You should be putting more of this in your body. And I'm thinking to myself, these young kids, they don't have a fucking chance. They don't have, I mean, like people that just, they come from, whether they came, I'm not going to say ghetto, but they're coming from like a family that's just not supportive. Yeah, hard times. Exactly, hard times. So they're coming from an area that's hard, where they have hard times, and they have no idea. And you know, they're probably in their household. There was never supplements or protein on the counter.
Well, fighters forever, even when you go back to boxing, like they're just notorious for, you know, doing their career in fighting, and then afterwards just being like broke or bankrupt. You know, the old bodybuilder, excuse me, not bodybuilder, the old boxer who owns the bar, and that's what he does now. And he used to be a champion, but now he just owns a bar and he doesn't make any money because they don't understand that whole process. Like, you know, that might be some good advice, you know?
God,
who's the boxer that quit and said no mas?
I don't know.
No, that was in the middle of his fight.
Yeah,
he said
no
more.
He said no mas. He said no more. Oh, man.
It's twice now you did a name that I should
have. I know.
Yeah.
He made millions of dollars. He turns around and he goes home and he basically put all that money back into his country and people just took it from him. I mean, he's a legend there in his, you know, in his country. But
it's was like it he, Roberto Duran?
Roberto, yes. Duran. Yeah. So Duran. So he's made all this millions of dollars. He put it all back into trying to help people that were in need and, you know, giving money to the government, giving money to like people that were helping. Now he's broke. Fucking dead broke, literally. But he's like a fucking huge celebrity, superstar over there. So he doesn't really pay for anything. But he lives in like a total shithole. But he still lives in his original town. He lives at home.
I wonder if he made any money off the Netflix. By the way, that's a great Netflix documentary. If you haven't seen it, Roberto Durant's.
I'll check it out.
It's bad. Yeah, it's really good. It's really, really good. And I wonder, now that you say that, if he even made any money off of that or not.
I think I saw it wasn't a true Hollywood story. What the hell was it? Like a 30 for 30 or something on it. Maybe it was a shorter version of the documentary.
I'm trying to think what the documentary was. It's not named after him. It's called, I'll look it up. I'll put it in the show notes for those of you guys that are listening right now. So it was awesome. It was a great documentary. I watched it maybe just a month ago, which is why I was surprised I couldn't fucking think of the name when you said that. I should have known that.
Now, do you do things on the side, business for yourself? What are you involved in besides fighting? Or is it connected all through fighting?
It's kind of all connected through fighting. There's a couple other things that I do. You know, right now I'm just starting a podcast as well. Sammy and the Punk, so we do it. We just filmed number 18 on Tuesday.
Okay,
so we try to do one a week just for right now to get our feet wet. We've done a couple times where we've done twice a week depending on the fight. So I interviewed like Khabib Nurmagomedov. I've interviewed, you know, DC and these guys, so I do a couple things. Shane Fazin, who does fight tips, and I've done some other stuff, you know, with Dan Leith, Lockhart Leith, the nutritionist who helped me and DC and those guys. So anyways, I do that. It's called Sammy the Punk. You can on YouTube and iTunes. But then I also do my own a gym here in San Jose, and I do strictly for mom and pops. I'm not looking for fighters. I don't want fighters in the gym. Like, it's actually kind of bad for business. Oh, wow. And because people come in, they get intimidated.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And the reason why I know this is because years we used to train during a class at AKA. All the fighters would come in and there'd be an 11 o'clock class and we would train. It was like 11:30 class or a noon class. We would train the same time some of the students were in there. When you got fighters in there beating each other up and yelling and cussing each other, like, fuck you, kick your fucking ass, you know? And like, we get right, heated, man.
You're some young kid coming into your first class. You're like, I don't know if I'm ready for this.
Sparring gets fucking heated, you know? Like, there's times we throw the gloves off and we're like, let's go. You know, it's for real, man. So I mean, there's times I've literally, like with Mike Kyle, Paul Bonatil, I've thrown the gloves off and just tried throwing down with them for real. Seriously, like, we're kicking our shin guards off. I'm gonna fucking kill you. You know, and it's for real. But I mean, like, we realized then that the class used to be full at AKA at noon, and then it went from like 25 people to like 6.
Wow.
And so Javier, the owner of AKA, was like, yeah, we're going to move the fighting around. We're going to switch that class. The fighter training is going to be at this time. And, you know, And then I realized that it was just wasn't good for business.
That, I bet you there's a lot of people that don't think about that. I've never even put that together.
Well, think about it in a gym, dude. Is a freaking hardcore maniac like powerlifters and bodybuilders and shit, is that good necessarily for the average person?
No, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
No, everybody's leaving.
That's part of why a lot of people don't even like gyms like Gold's, right? It definitely appeals to a certain demographic of people that, which is not your average Jane or Joe trying to lose 30 pounds of fat.
Think about all the YouTube videos that have gone viral, right? About people making fun of the people that, exactly. You know, and it's because people, it makes people uncomfortable. It makes people uncomfortable. It makes people feel like, man, that guy's so
dude,
weird.
In the gym. In
That's what created Planet Fitness.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Fuck, man.
In the gym business, if you, they're the worst customers. I'll tell you why. Because they use your gym like crazy. So they put a shit ton of wear and tear on your equipment. They pay their membership fee religiously, but it's cheap because the whole model is designed around getting people to not show up. Mm-hmm. And then they're loud as hell and they're big and muscular and intimidating. And so it's like you don't want those people if you're going to have that kind of model. Otherwise, you charge a lot of money and then you have fewer members and, you know, whatever.
The fighters are there every day. They never try to pay. Yeah. So like they don't pay their membership religiously because they don't have money. So they don't pay. So then they're always trying to get something for free. Like, oh, I didn't bring my gloves, or I don't have a mouthpiece. Can I borrow some? Is there any loaners? Like, you know, like we've had a fighter. One fighter came in from another state. He's like, yeah, I didn't bring my mouthpiece. You guys got any loner mouthpieces? I'm like, loner mouthpiece? Like, yeah, we got one already pre-molded to somebody else's teeth. You want to try that one on? See if it fits? You know? So I own a gym here in San Jose called Knox Martial Arts and Fitness. And what I do is I work with like kid athletes as well as adults. Cool. But it's mainly right before I came today, I was working with a little girl who's on a soccer trial, like a traveling team for soccer.
Awesome.
So I do sports and agility for them, things like that. For the younger kids, I try not to do personal training with adults because I feel like the dedication's not there as much as a kid that's an athlete who really wants it. You know, the other thing too is I feel like I've had enough experience in life in general how to try and get the most out of a kid athlete. And it seems like it works. Like I have a really good jiu-jitsu program for kids and it's pretty big. And
that's awesome. Where are you guys located?
So we're on Pearl and Branham right there. There's like a wiener schnitzel right there in the parking lot.
Holy shit, dude, you're right by me.
Yeah, so I'm right there on Pearl and Branham.
I'm bringing my kid by.
There you go.
Oh, that's excellent.
So I'm right there on the corner. It used to be like an old gaming thing. I've been there for about 3 years. And it's been great, man. I'm right next to Fire Station 13.
I know exactly where
my boys, man. The boys over there are always looking out for me. So, no, it's been great, man. Like,
how long have you guys been open?
3 years.
Oh, wow. And it's going good?
It's going well. Like, we had the first year was it was rough, man.
Yeah.
It was rough. Imagine. It was rough, you know? So, it's just trying to get, and I didn't realize how hard it was to have employees. Man, it's so rough. You know, you got to find the right vibe and the right fit. And I've got a great group of people now that are there and it's like, I can trust them and rely on them. And, you know, and we got through the hard times together in the beginning. Like now we got the ones that weren't meant to be are gone. The ones that are here, they're here. It seems like they're here to stay. And I really love that.
Excellent. Right? I want to hear about like, who's like the toughest fight or toughest fighter you've ever had to fight?
Okay, so there's a couple things. So there's one person that, like, we talked about, like, when did you know?
Yeah.
Okay? The one fight was against Hermes Franca.
Okay.
I had won. That was my second UFC fight. I had won the first two rounds. In the third round, the very beginning, all I had to do was just stick and stay away. And he threw a kick against the cage, and I caught the kick. And the guy was known for power. Like, he had just beat Carl Uno the fight before. He had some big wins. He beat Yves Edwards. And I caught the kick, and he had some power. So he just threw like a loopy punch, caught me right on the button and dropped me. And he beat the shit out of me for about 3.5 minutes. Like, literally, there was a couple times where the ref was going to jump in, didn't jump in. And, you know, anyways, so I beat him the first two rounds. The third round, for 3.5 minutes, he kicked the shit out of me. Mm-hmm. Like, to the point where I look like fucking Elephant Man afterwards. But the last minute of the fight, he had gassed himself trying to finish me, so I was able to get my bearings back about me and finish the fight harder than he did, which I felt made it a 10-9 round, because now they're talking about making 10-8 rounds more prevalent. Like, they're going to make them happen more often. But back then, they didn't. So I survived that round, and I ended up winning a split decision, which was amazing for me. But that was the fight that I'm going to tell you right now. That was the fight that I knew I was a fighter. Mm. That was the one fight where I looked down at my fucking, I said, dude, there's no fucking way I'm losing this fight. I always wondered, because honestly, as a kid growing up, I always wondered, it's one thing to beat somebody up on the street. okay? Because you're fighting someone that has no fucking experience. They're probably drunk too, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's one thing to beat those guys up, you know, and think that you're the man, but you're not the fucking man, okay? So when I got into a fight against somebody that was really good, it was a jiu-jitsu black belt, fucking subbed everybody, like super entertaining, heavy hands, you know, and experience, fought the best guys. We were considered 1, 2, and 3, me, him, and Yves Edwards at the time in the world. And so when I'm fighting him and he drops me and I come back and I finish the round harder than him, in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, you are made out for this. This is what awesome. This is what it's about. Like when I see these other guys that are, and just so we're clear, you know how much I made for that fight? $8,000.
Oh, okay.
I made $4,000 and $4,000.
Jeez.
So had I lost or it had been a draw,
$4,000.
I would have made $4,000. But at the time,
forget
to me,
the shit beat out of you for 3 minutes.
But to me, that was fuck. That was amazing, man.
Really?
I had no money at the time.
Wow.
Like my rent, I was living in, and there's another story, but I was living in a porn warehouse.
I was living in a porn warehouse.
How did we miss this?
Yeah. Wait. What do you mean a porn warehouse?
I was living in a warehouse where the guy that owned the warehouse.
Dildomania.
Yeah, exactly. Sweet. He used to buy and sell and trade porn from this warehouse. So he would buy like old 60s, 70s, 80s porn magazines, videos, DVDs, cassettes, everything, and he would buy and sell them on eBay. So he'd pick up like the old Nina Hartley DVD he'd hold on to it for a year and he'd turn around and sell it again for like triple the money that he bought it for.
Holy shit.
But it was like crates and crates of stacked porn inside this warehouse.
So you just had an endless supply.
Sweet. Yes. Yeah,
your friends must have loved you.
Anytime I need to cop a jerk, bro, I just walked downstairs, fucking pulled the helmet off real quick and came back. It was the greatest ever.
Oh my God. Hands down.
Excellent.
I think you have to be, and I up until this moment, I thought Sal was the most versed in porn. But
yeah.
I'm sure you could.
Nina Hartley,
you probably go all the way back to the 20s.
Yeah. Old school, baby. Oh, old school. God. Gotta go back.
Oh my God.
Old porn.
I used to live in this porn warehouse. I paid $150 a month to live in this warehouse. So when I made $4,000, I was like, man, I could pay my rent for 2-3 years easily. I ain't fucking ever moving out of this porn warehouse. But it was the funniest thing ever. But at the time, I only made, you know, $4,000. But that was the fight, though, that made me feel like I was a fighter.
Yeah.
You know? And then later on in my career, just a couple years ago, when I fought Tony Ferguson, that was another fight. Mm. Like, you see these guys, I got cut up real bad in the fight. I mean, I had like fucking Mercedes signs on my head, you know, from different cuts, you know, and I have a nasty cut here on my head here. And I got stitched up in the back, and it took probably about 2 hours for him to stitch me all the way up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was nasty, blood coming down my face. Like, I looked like I jumped in fucking blood, just all red.
Wow.
You know, the whole fight. But there was never a moment in that fight that I was like, fucking just give up.
Never.
Mm-hmm. Never, you know?
So that's got to feel good.
No, and that's the thing is, you I don't know, like if you give away participation trophies, and I'm going to go back on this, is because then the kid doesn't feel the need to go on.
Of course.
He can just give up and then move on to the next thing because, yes, next time I'm going to get another trophy.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel bad for the kids that don't ever get to the point where they really earn the first, second, and third place. But I feel that it's important for kids growing up. If you're condoning mediocrity, then they're never going to excel at anything else they want to do.
Well, it doesn't translate into real fucking life. You ever gone to a job where they fucking you get paid the same as the guy that's outperforming
you? Showed
you?
Up.
Yeah, because you showed up. No, it doesn't work that way. It's not real life.
Yeah, I just, everyone's in this feel good life, you know, and I feel like you said, life's not that way, you know, but it's sad to see because I think this is what's developing in our younger generation. I think, and if you want the strength of a strong country, you need to develop the younger generation right now. I feel like the ones that are already in college, kind of a lost cause already. They're done. You got to start moving on to the kids that are literally like in elementary school, intermediate school. You can still save them in high school, I think. You know, you get into that point where you can still save them like, hey, let's be the best. Let's be the best at everything we do. And I'm all for the do what you want to do as long as you love it. If you want to be broke as long as you're doing what you love. I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but then don't do what you love and be broke and then turn around and complain that you think your college should be paid for or you should get, you know,
everything for free.
That to me is not, they're not the same thing.
Right.
Okay, you can't say I want to be broke and do what I love but then want someone else to take care of you while you do what you love. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. I actually had an argument with someone about that the other day where they were talking about college and they were saying how, you know, I was explaining to them like, well, okay, here's how, you know, first of all, it's never free. Somebody's paying for it. So whether it's taxed or whether you pay for it yourself. But they were talking about how, you know, it's not fair that someone with a like liberal arts degree, you know, is not going to make as much as someone with an engineering degree or whatever. And I'm like, what do you mean it's not fair? Like, that's just the way it is.
Where's the demand for that?
Yeah. And if you're going to, you know, try and get a loan to go to school, like it only makes sense that that the bank should tell you, hey, look, I know the degree you're going to get. You're not going to be able to pay us back. So we can't give you the money for that because you're getting a degree in something that's not going to make you any money. That's just the way life works.
Look, life is a choice to be successful, to not be successful. If you decide you don't want to be successful, that's your problem. You chose liberal arts.
Right.
I didn't fucking choose it for you. Yeah. Your parents didn't choose it for you. You chose it, which means you obviously were either one of two things. You really care for liberal arts, or you were just looking to get a fucking degree and move on with life.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the two things happened, right? Like you were just looking for the quick degree, the easiest degree. You could get your parents off your back and move on with life thinking you're going to get paid outside of that now that I got a degree. But what is it?
Right.
Like,
At one point, I don't know where this happened, but we started telling people like, you know, it's all about just finding your purpose and what you love. And if you find your purpose and what you love, that's all that matters. So then you have this generation that's doing that. But then when they find out what their purpose and what they love to do doesn't pay a lot of money, they get pissed off and they think, well, I should be able to get paid that as much as that guy because he fights and he found his purpose. I don't desire to do that. I desire to teach and do this. So why don't we get paid equally?
But then it's not a desire anymore, though.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, if it's not something you love, then if you're not okay with getting paid peanuts, you're not doing it for love anymore. Right. I literally paid $25 to fight my first fight because I fucking loved fighting and training.
That's a great point.
I love, like, the one thing I'm going to miss the most when I retire is being in that fucking locker room with the guys, being out on the mat with the guys, training with those guys, the shit talking, like the shit we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm going to miss the most, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sure like when you guys were to wrap this up and be like, man, fuck, what are we going to do now? Like, you're going to miss this. You're going to miss all the shit you guys
have. Well, the good thing
through.
About what we do is we just talk. So I can do this forever.
No, but I'm saying, you're right. You guys can do it forever. But let's just say if you decide to do another show or like
talk about this all the time. Yeah. We talk about it all the time and realizing that. And if you're truly passionate about it, then it isn't about the money. It isn't about all those things. You said it best right there. You paid to do your fight.
Yeah.
And you know what? Something like a liberal, and I know we're picking on liberal arts right now, but I just
randomly picked it, but like my sister got a degree in anthropology.
Horticulture.
Well, no, my sister got a degree in anthropology, for example, and she's like, there's not much I can do with that besides, you know, be a professor, so I have to go get the PhD or work in a museum, or there's not much I can do with it, so she actually went and started learning some other stuff, but that's just the reality, and like you said, like if you really love it, then just do it, but understand that, you know, some things are going to pay more than others, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, just do what you love and be okay with it.
What people don't seem to understand is that doing what you love means extra hustle. Because, like, I love training kids, but I also don't want to have to go out there and hustle to get kids to come to my camps or get kids to come to my gym. Like, I feel like, oh, I've worked enough to be a fighter. I want the people just to come to me. It doesn't work that way, man. As much as I would love for that to happen, I've got to market on, you know, on social media. I've got to market in, you know, on Google. I've got to do these things. Otherwise, no one's going to ever hear about it. You have to hustle. Mm-hmm. You got to put the work in. I got to put door flyers on, you know, and you got to do it, man. You got to walk around the neighborhoods that you're in and be like, hey, you know, they give you a free pass for the day or two pass for the day, whatever it is. You know what I mean? You got to be that guy walking, because if you hire some kid to do it, he's going to take all those flyers you spent, you know, $1,000 on, throw them in the trash and collect his, oh, it took me 3 hours to drop all those and collect his $100, you know, for the 3 hours.
I hate that shit.
You know what I mean? So you got to hustle. If you want to do what you love and you want people to recognize you for doing what you love, you need to hustle doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. What is it moving forward? What does it look like for you?
You know, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Realistically, like moving forward, we'll see what happens.
How long do you plan on fighting for?
I don't know if I'm going to fight again. That's up in the air. I'm not making any decisions like under, you know, emotional circumstances. I want to make sure that I take my time to really think about it. The other thing as well is like, as far as me fighting again, I fought already once this year. If I fight again, I mean, realistically, a whole five paycheck goes to taxes. Mm-hmm. So what's the point? You know, you make a certain amount of money and then I'm going to pay. Basically, if I fight another one, I put my body through a whole camp. I fight again, I pay that. Almost that whole check goes to taxes.
Now, why do you say that? Is that because you've established yourself and a business for yourself with the school and you're making a living off of mm-hmm. that, and then basically the amount of money you would make off a purse is,
well, there's when
just
you make
put
a,
you in a new bracket.
Yeah, when you put you in a new bracket, you make a certain amount, pretty much like 3/4 of it. Well, I try to break it down for athletes, right? I feel like athletes should have a different tax bracket. They should have a different tax, the way their taxes are done. Because look, let's just say, and of course I'm biased because I'm an athlete, mm-hmm. but if you take what I make and then I pay, let's just say I pay 38.6% or 38.8% or mm-hmm. whatever in taxes, right? Then I give 20% to my agent, 20% to my trainers. What am I left with?
Wow.
So nothing. Why? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Nothing.
Crickets.
You yeah. know, it's crickets. Yeah, exactly. So that's what people don't seem to understand. And I make all this money, right? And you make all this money. Oh, you make so much money. Yeah, but you got to pay your taxes, man. Like, you know, like not just taxes, but I got to pay my agent. I got to pay my trainers. I got to pay my coaches.
Yeah, you got to make smart business decisions.
You got to make smart decisions. So, and what I try to tell people is like, look, if they have the money left over, they're going to turn. Like, for me, I would have probably opened another gym. I would have hired more people. If I had more money that I could do things with, someone who, like myself, like for me anyways, I can't speak for all athletes, but for someone like me, I want to open more gyms, more businesses. I want to do more things.
Very cool.
Start a podcast. Do that. But things like this cost money. You guys know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You guys
mm-hmm.
built this up. This is amazing. I walked in the room like, gosh, damn.
Yeah.
You know, there's a green screen right here. Fuck, you guys can see this shit. It's pretty dope.
Yeah. Now you know what I mean? Just got to use it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you guys understand what I mean,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, like, for sure.
It's, you've got to... you. If I had more money to do things with, I would do more. I feel like I would do more good. You know, you mm-hmm. have more camps for kids during the summer. I would build more programs for kids. I'd be able to give a little bit more at my gym. Like, hey, you know, this parent has 3 kids here. Instead of charging them $150 a kid, I'll charge you like $89 a kid. You know, like, and then you cut them. You cut whatever my cost is on my geese. You know, I give you whatever it is my cost on my geese. You know, like instead of charging them more for the markup. One thing is, it's hard for parents who have multiple kids to put them all in sports. So expensive.
Super expensive. Yeah,
super expensive, right? So I think it's up to the athletes that have been there and done that and been in the places that we've been is to try and help give back and give back in the way that you can by just your donating your time, you know, giving your time to your community.
It's very cool that you have a perspective like that because, you know, even you talking about making more money, you translate that in the ability for me to give more. You know,
well, look, I don't make it. I make good money, but like when I was in this juvenile hall here in San Jose when I was a kid. You know, I got in a fight at school, at middle school, and I got put in that juvenile hall. So now what I do is randomly once every year, once every 6 months, whenever I can. One of my friends is one of the sheriffs there that works there. He walks me in, and I just walk around in the pods and talk to the kids.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, and shit. I'll take my world title belt with me too, and I'll be like, hey. Dude, I grew up, and when I tell the kids that I grew up on the east side of San Jose, they're like in shock. They're like, no way, get the fuck out of here, you know? And sometimes I'll bring like a highlight video or whatever, me fighting, like here, walking out in an arena filled with 20,000 people. I fought in Japan, 43,000 people.
That's awesome.
It's fucking insane, right?
That's awesome.
I mean, New Year's Eve in Japan, you know, 50,000 people, 52,000 or whatever, and New Year's Eve in Japan. I walk out and this crowd's fucking enormous. I'm just like looking around. I mean, like I was in awe myself.
Awesome.
You know what I mean? It's
like
crazy.
Gladiator.
But you think about it, you tell a kid that's in juvenile hall who just feels like this is where my life's going to be.
Yeah.
And you show them a video like that and say, I grew up on the same streets you did, you know? And they're like, oh, well you had this. You know, I'm like, no, I didn't have any of that.
Yeah.
I just did it. I just literally got rid of all my other friends. I didn't get rid of them. They weeded themselves out when I just kept going to the gym every day and training and they were no longer around. They're like, they just thought they lost my number.
Mm-hmm. Bro, you lived in a porn warehouse.
Yeah,
if that's not closing enough, right? I mean, that I'm sold right there. I'm
this like, whole conversation—that's the one thing he's gonna leave.
Motherfucker paid his first fight, and he lived in a porn warehouse for $150
bucks. He can't get
it
out of his head.
Like,
now.
Fuck you,
no.
You can do it, man. Because
yeah.
you can recycle enough cans to pay for that. You know
exactly.
what I'm saying? Every month, that's fucking great.
Well, good deal, man. It's been good talking to you, brother.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you very much. Listen, mindpumpmedia.com. Go there, sign up. It's free, 30 days of coaching, still free. You can also find us on Instagram at Mind Pump Media. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal. Justin's at Mind Pump Justin. And Adam is at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.